follow up a piece in the paper today by Lauren Novak. Often talk to Lauren in our spin cycle on a Friday, but she writes in the Advertiser today, more than half of all reports of suspected child abuse or neglect are deemed unnecessary or insignificant by authorities, prompting calls for an awareness campaign to ease pressure on the reporting hotline. And it goes on to say that these are examples of really trivial reports that are being sent in on this hotline. Examples include reports made over a child sent to school with, wait for it, a Vegemite sandwich and chocolate for lunch. Sounds pretty good to me. Parents yelling in front of a child or a child attending school with head lice but no history of other problems. Now, how many kids have been sent to school with head lice or they've been discovered with head lice? And it's not a sign that there are any great problems at school. So maybe we've just got to the point in this state where we're trigger happy. And as a result of that, all sorts of trivial stuff are being reported on this hotline to make sure that we detect child abuse early on. But instead, we're chasing kids who've just got head lice or maybe had a Vegemite sandwich and some chocolate for their lunch. Now, I'd love your views on this. By all means, give us a call because always love your thoughts. 1-300-222-891 is the number to call. And the text line is 0467-922-891. Kath Taylor is the Chief Executive of the Department of Child Protection, and she joins us now. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, David.
Kathy, is this, let's begin at the beginning, is this report basically right? And that is that you're getting way too many people ringing the child abuse hotline, and that's actually getting in the way of looking after kids who are at risk.
Look, I'd probably frame it a little bit differently. Lauren's right in that a good proportion of the calls that we receive don't meet the threshold for intervention. But whether I'd call them unnecessary and insignificant, I know that some of those examples you provided appear very low level, but I'd be concerned about sending a message out to the public about not alerting us to issues they're concerned about, because often, you know, that conversation with someone on the phone where they're talking to us about one issue may actually also reveal some other issues for us. So, look, I'd certainly say with some good training and support, we think we can get a better strike rate for the phone calls coming in.
Did you have somebody ring the hotline complaining that a child was sent to school with a Vegemite sandwich and chocolate for lunch?
Look, I understand that has been a previous call to the hotline. It's not one that's occurred in my time. But I certainly think, and it's one that I think every state and jurisdiction works on, is we don't want low-level matters that, you know, aren't going to give us any advice about, you know, harm and abuse and neglect. But we do not want to know when people are worried about children and their care.
But you don't want anybody ringing in the future saying somebody's got a Vegemite sandwich and a chocolate.
No, I don't want someone phoning.
All right, yep. So these are good guidelines for our listeners. I think the vast majority of our listeners are very sensible people and they would not be bothering your hotline with such trivialities. But let's get the rules in place. So if you see a kid with a Vegemite sandwich and a chocolate, don't bother ringing the hotline. What about if you see parents yelling in front of a child? I suppose it's a tricky one, isn't it?
It sure is, and I'd always say to a caller, err on the side of caution, because what we don't know is, are there other issues happening in that household? You know, are the family experiencing other pressures and tensions? Is, in fact, you know, their family violence occurring? So I definitely would not want to say to someone, don't call if you see, you know, someone yelling in front of them. But I'd also recommend that, you know, there are times when, parents need a hand, and it's also critically important that we provide support and advice, if people are calling up about what they might be able to do and offer.
I've got a text here from somebody saying, hi David, it might possibly be the case that once you've done the mandatory reporting course, you are legally obligated to report anything you feel is suspicious. So people are on the side of caution to reduce the risk to themselves of being charged with a crime or some misdemeanour. That's a really interesting point, Kathy Taylor.
It is indeed. And look, I think it's so important that we, you know, we obviously provide people with good training about mandatory reporting. South Australia is going to go a step further and they're going to introduce a mandatory notifiers guide. And this is going to be an interactive process and guide at the start of the eCull process. So we hope that, yes, it's important you get the training, but we should also provide ongoing support. We'll also ask questions. So when people phone up, you know, often we get scant information, and we've now are really making sure that we get really good information because, you know, we need to know a lot more. So I agree with you. I think the mandatory notifier training is such an important first step, and we need to make sure that it's not a one-off, that we're actually providing that ongoing training and support.
All right. Now, our phone lines are open. What do you think about this? Have you been along to one of these courses and at the end of it you thought, look, I'm just going to report anything that smacks of any problem at all, because I'm not going to be the dumb bunny that's held responsible for not picking up something. 1-300-222-891 is the number to call. The text line's 0467-922-891. We're talking to Kathy Taylor. She's Chief Executive of the Department of Child Protection. I've got another question here from a listener saying, what high-level matters actually get a response?
Obviously, it's one of the things that I think often happens is people think that there are certain matters that get responses and other matters that don't. So when the information comes in, our staff assess the information that's come in to really make sure about, you know, what are the issues about abuse and neglect. Obviously, if it involves a child, an immediate risk of harm, we're going to actually provide a response. And so you'll often hear about tiers.
Yeah, you've got various tiers. And what's the highest level tier?
Tier one.
Okay,
and
so
that's
tier one.
Essentially, I'd say to you, forget the tier. The most important thing is that's one where we need to go out within 24 hours.
And what's your strike rate? How many tier ones have you got over a reporting period, and how many did you actually get out to within 24 hours?
So in terms of our tier ones, I think from recollection, for the 16-17 year, there were nowhere near as many as you might think of tier ones. I think it was about approximately 1,240 tier ones. And certainly we got out to a significant proportion of them within the 24 hours. Now, sometimes we may not, because really practical issues such as the address we've given, people may have subsequently moved or something like that, but quite rightly.
Well, 1,240 sounds like a lot to me. This is the most serious category, and you're getting 1,240 in a year.
Yeah, 1,240 in a year, David, but don't forget, we're talking about, you know, we at the moment screen in about 21,000 notifications a year. So the 1,240 is only a proportion of those.
Right.
You're right, 1,240 are way too many, and we'd love to see that continue to reduce. There were 1,350 the year before.
So that's about four a day.
Of
tier one.
You're absolutely right. It's, okay, you know, something in that vicinity.
And
of
you
about
say
four
a significant proportion are done within 24 hours. Are seen to.
Within 24 hours. Yep.
So what's a significant proportion?
I'd have to get back to you on that, but I know that we report on that. It's a really important element, because we need to make sure we're responding to those and kicking them off in time.
All right. Can you get back to us with that figure?
I sure can.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy Taylor. Now, another person says, what's Dave? He says, what's the point in reporting anything to the hotline? You can't get through anyway. How many people just can't get through on the hotline?
So,
I suppose you wouldn't know.
That's a good point. And this is obviously why the Royal Commission made recommendations about a range of things that they wanted us to do. Obviously, that we need to reduce the wait time. We obviously want to reduce their call abandonment rate.
So what
is
the wait time?
We don't know at the moment, which is, you know, if someone abandons a call, do they ring back or do they just give up?
So what's the wait time at the moment?
So the wait time at the moment, by June, it had dropped down to approximately just under 23 minutes as an average.
Okay, so what's... And we all know that averages can mean all sorts of things, depending on which kind of average you're talking about. So what's the longest that a person's been kept waiting on the hotline in the last 12 months?
In the last 12 months, I know that we answered a question previously, and there was one person back in November last year that waited for a number of hours on the hotline.
Right.
Yep.
And that would be exceptional?
Oh, absolutely.
A number of hours?
Yep.
Do you remember how many hours?
I'd have to confirm that, but I know that we responded to a question recently.
Was that in estimates, was it?
No, it wasn't in estimates. It would have been on a previous question to that. Yep.
Okay. So it was hours?
Yep.
More than 5 hours?
I don't recall so, David, okay. But yeah.
Just hours. All right.
Yep.
Got lots of texts coming in on this. Somebody says, must be an election coming up, trying to make a completely malfunctioning department sound better. Somebody else says, teachers give up reporting because of wait times. I've been waiting on the phone for more than an hour. Somebody else says, David, it's so damn hard that the government and our taxes have to go to this because of poor parenting. Well, that's true. And Mandy from Parcom says, we are on hold for between 3 to 6 hours to report. When will this be addressed? So this is somebody who's a regular listener to the program, is a good and decent person, who says in her line of work, they're waiting between 3 and 6 hours on the hotline. Kathy Taylor.
So, David, I don't know if Mandy's that's a recent experience or if it's a dated experience, but as I said, from the 1st of July, we're doing a lot of work to ensure that we're going to be able to continue to reduce those waiting times. In December last year, the waiting times were far greater than they are today. So every month we're making inroads in terms of those waiting times. They're still not where they need to be. I wouldn't want to mislead you. And they're not where the public want them to be, because if people are concerned, as I said at the outset, we want to hear from them. What we also want to ensure, though, is that the calls that are coming in, that we get all the information in one go, that we get up-to-date addresses, details about families, and that also, and one of the other new features that we're putting in place is a callback feature, because quite rightly some people will say, look, I don't want to sit on a phone, I actually want to talk to someone, but I'm happy for them to give me a call
if there's a real risk, call the police. Don't waste your time with the hotline. But you might be calling about a series of things which add up to a tier one risk in the assessment of the department, but I don't know whether the police are the best people to call. Maybe they are. I don't know.
So
what do you think?
I always would say, if you ever think that a child, in terms of a criminal act, is at risk, of course call the police. For us, and I think that example you just gave about, sometimes it may not be about the one call meeting the threshold, but it might be about that last piece of information actually gives us a cumulative picture of harm and what's happening for children. So, of course, when you get more than, 50,000 notifications a year, and only 21,000 of those meet the threshold for intervention. Yes, we'd love to get a better, match in there, but no, I don't want to send a message.
Oh, sorry.
We don't want to hear from people.
When you said earlier 21,000 notifications, I thought that was the total. What you're saying is you get more than 50,000 people ringing the hotline and 21,000 reach a threshold to intervene.
21,000 meet the threshold to intervene, and we get notifications through two ways, David. We get them through phone calls, and we also get them through electronic means. When people don't think they're urgent, but they believe that they've got information they think that we benefit from receiving.
Look, so many questions to ask you. Stay on the line, Kathy Taylor. She's Chief Executive of the Department for Child Protection. We've been prompted to discuss this issue of the child abuse hotline with her because of a piece that Lauren Novak has written in the Advertiser today. And basically, the gist of the article is that a lot of the calls to the hotline are over trivial matters. And if you've been listening in the last few minutes, you would see that there's this enormous workload that the department is expected to come to grips with. Maybe people should stop bringing over trivial things, such as, I saw a child sent to school with a Vegemite sandwich and chocolate for lunch, or this kid has head lice. But other people have rung in and said, well, hang on, we seriously doubt the value in ringing at all, because you can be kept hanging on for so very, very long. In a moment, we'll talk to Jenny Charlton. She's Vice President of the Australian Association of Social Workers. She's been waiting very patiently. But Rachel Sanderson is the Shadow Minister for Child Protection. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, David. And we can see how chaotic and dysfunctional the department has been. and still is, after years and years of, you know, changes and things that are just failing. With 52,000 calls to the car line, as you've just extracted from information, nearly 29,000 of those are considered no fire only concerns, and nothing is done about that.
Well, so, look, I don't think anybody would argue that in the past it's easy to make a case that FAES, the old Families and Youth Services, and what's now Child Protection, has taken over. In the past, you can make out a very good case. The coroner certainly did, and the Nyland Royal Commission certainly did, that there was grave areas of dysfunction. But would you cut them any slack in the last 12 months that they've actually tried to get their act together?
Well, certainly Cathy's trying, but we're not seeing any results from that. Certainly there's two ways this could go. Either there are well-intended people that are ringing the Child Abuse Report Line for trivial matters. If that's the case, and that was identified a couple of years ago as a possible reason for so many calls, then why haven't they rolled out the education advertising program that was developed in 2015? The government finds money to advertise and promote their big batteries, their new hospital. Why aren't they telling people what to do, like the crossing the line ads and the, you know, if it's only a minor matter, go to your local doctor, not to the hospital. If it really is that they think there are people ringing that shouldn't be ringing, that are well-intended, tell them where it is they should be ringing.
Cathy, so that we can, well, let's go back to Cathy Taylor. Cathy Taylor, will you be running an advertising campaign educating people about when they should call the hotline and when they shouldn't?
We're going to certainly continue to do ongoing support and training, David. We believe that's of better value in terms of the sorts of matters that are best directed to the hotline an education campaign.
So who's going to get the training?
So the training is obviously going out to all of our mandatory notifiers. So this is a really important message, David, because it's really critical to understand that a good proportion of all of the contacts that we receive to CARL, which is the, you know, reporting line, are from our mandatory notifiers. So we're talking about our police, our
teachers. So of the 50,000, let's burrow down. Of the 50,000 calls that you get in a year, how many of those would come from mandatory reporters, people who have to give you a call if they see something suspicious?
So, first of all, David, the 50,000 is a combination of calls and the electronic CARL notifications, as I said earlier. But in terms of the mandatory notifiers, more than half of all of the contacts that would be coming in via the, to CARL are from our mandatory notifiers. And that's why I said to you earlier,
so almost half
aren't. We do the guide.
So almost half aren't coming from mandatory reporters.
No, actually more than half are coming from mandatory data.
Yes, so almost half aren't coming from mandatory reporters.
And that's why we don't want to dissuade family members.
But shouldn't you be running a public education campaign? Because almost half aren't mandatory reporters. They're just ordinary people listening to this program right now.
So we'll continue to do work, David, to make sure. But the last thing we'd want to do is send a message that we don't want to hear from people when they're concerned.
Oh, no, you don't want to do that. But if you've got people who are ringing for no good reason and you're educating the mandatory reporters, why don't you do what Rachel Sanderson says? The government can afford to run a campaign telling us about their new battery and about their new hospital. Why don't you run an advertising campaign encouraging people to get it right when it comes to reporting child neglect?
And it's a bit like the questions you were asking me at the beginning of the program. It's so critical that we actually ensure that we have a good system in place, that we hear from people. And certainly the Vegemite sandwich and the chocolate, we all agreed, isn't one we want to hear about. But the one, for example, where we talked about, parents yelling in front of a child, quite rightly, it's not as simple as don't report or do report. What we don't want to do is persuade someone who may have some other valuable information for us.
All right. Well, let's go to Jenny Charlton. She's been very patient listening to all this. She's Vice President of the Australian Association of Social Workers. Good morning, Jenny Charlton.
Good morning, David.
Gee, you'd earn your money as a social worker, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. The legislation, as you know, means that every social worker is in fact a mandated reporter.
Yeah.
And so therefore all of our members sort of within their roles have to ensure that they meet the legislation and make reports when and as needed.
But the people who are mandatory reporting, they would be the least likely to report trivial things, surely. Because they would have been trained up. I mean, a social worker would know, look, I'm not going to report somebody for bringing a Vegemite sandwich and a chocolate to lunch or for just having head lice. A social worker would be they're trained, aren't they? I mean, they've got years at university. They've got maybe some work out in the field under their belt. They're not going to be reporting trivial things.
Yes, definitely. And I suppose what we know is that the child safe environment training and the way that the system was set up, that social workers within the department, when there's new information around abuse for a child, they actually do need to phone in through the child abuse report line. I know that that's something that has changed over the last year, and especially through the online reporting, that those online reports are able to be made. So there definitely has been some really good work in the last 12 months of trying to change that. And what we know is that the child safe environment training has also changed their focus on looking at prevention,
yep.
So really looking at child safe environments and actually trying to reduce the child abuse, which is what, as social workers, I think we would love to get to the point where we no longer have a job because we've done so well in that child safe environment.
Well, Jenny Charlton, thanks for talking to us. Jenny is with the Australian Association of Social Workers. Professor Leah Bromfield is co-director of the Australian Centre for Child Protection. She joins us now. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, David.
The system, the workload seems to be enormous, but perhaps a good place to start would be getting rid of trivial concerns, and that might actually free up some time for the serious ones, because if you've got, well, it was one person waiting back in November for several hours and not being able to get through. We've got texts here from people saying, no, I just don't bother anymore. There's clearly a problem. What are your thoughts about this?
My thought is that in a system where you've got, you know, 50,000 calls, you're always going to be able to find the one or two trivial matters. You know, and when we hear them as a community, we can all say, that shouldn't be reported. I don't know what that person was thinking. We actually, during the Margaret Nylands Royal Commission, she actually had a look at those cases because we'd heard this mythology about the trivial matters. And so she actually went and had a look and said, is this really happening? What proportion of these screened out notifications are trivial matters? And she found the opposite problem. That what she found was that, in fact, the majority of those that were screened out met the statutory threshold and should have been screened in. Now, to me,
so you don't buy it. You don't buy the
I
line.
Don't buy
that,
it.
You don't buy that more than half of all the reports to this hotline are trivial.
I absolutely don't buy it. I think that our community is actually much better at figuring out when a child is at risk. And you don't stay on the line for hours to report a Vegemite sandwich. We've got a state in which 60% of cases that are screened in are not getting a response. I don't think we should be spending money on a campaign. I think we should be spending money on genuine interventions to try and change this problem, which is the worst pyramid scheme this state could have ever created.
What do you mean by pyramid scheme?
I mean that if you don't answer the call, if you close the case that's been referred in as a 60%, if you close them and don't investigate them, you don't get out and change the life of that child, they'll be reported back. If you don't change the life of that first child, the second child will be born into that situation. And children will then, drift through the system of not getting adequate responses until they're, a proportion of them become teenagers with problems and early pregnancy, and we see an intergenerational cycle that we're just not breaking. I think we are growing this problem, not reducing it.
So rather than running an advertising campaign such as Rachel Sanderson from the opposition suggested, or training up people such as Kathy Taylor from the Department of Child Protection was suggesting, who are mandatory reporters, to screen out trivial cases. Rather than doing that, because you don't buy that there are a lot of trivial cases there, you would be doing what? Throw more resources at this issue, put more people on the hotline so that they're not waiting so long, so that all of these matters can be assessed.
I would think that we need to do things differently. So I'd actually agree with Cathy that we need to provide better advice to our reporters about how to make a good notification. So it's not that the things that they're worried about aren't concerning, but in some of the e-notifications, for example, there's just not enough information. So the person had a valid concern. There's enough there for you to think, oh, I'm quite worried, but I'm going to have to call that person back because they didn't give me this and this that would allow me to make a proper assessment there. So we need to give people who are making those reports, so some good frameworks, and that's what Cathy's talking about with things like mandatory reporter guides. They have that in New South Wales. It works quite well in giving people some structured guidance on things to think about when they're making the report. So I actually agree with that.
Okay.
But I think we should also be looking at what have we got in this state that is providing the early intervention and prevention interventions to fundamentally change this problem.
Professor Leah Bromfield, thank you very much. And I'm sure we're going to talk again.
Yes, thanks, David.
Leah is the co-director of the Australian Centre for Child Protection. Before that, Jenny Charlton from the Association of Social Workers, Rachel Sanderson's with the State Opposition, and Cathy Taylor's now running the Department of Child Protection.